call the meeting to order. Okay, we're going to hear from the those in opposition to subdivision number 2010-3, and we'll begin with Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a handout here of the PowerPoint that I'll be running through, which I can pass out to the...
I do need to ask you to, for the record, to state your name.
I apologize. And Mike Smith, I am an attorney in town. I'm not speaking today for the law firm. I guess I have to apologize to Mr. Brohl because it might in part be due to my presence here that he's still with us now at 10 o'clock at night instead of Mr. Robertson, so I do apologize for that.
There will be repercussions.
I'm sure he'll find a way to get even.
I do live at 34452 Hudson Road, which is, I would guesstimate, about 100 yards from the project site.
We're going to turn the lights down a little bit so you can see the screen better. Those of you in the back, feel free to move around and take a look, get where you can see if you want to. Up to you. Thank you. I'm not paying very good attention to me.
All right. I'm going to try to move these slides forward this way. I'm not sure. I may have to toy with it first. No, it works. Okay. Just as a beginning point, there was a number of comments made about where the project was, and as a general overview of the comments that were made, I would note that much of the discussion that was made by the applicant resolved around what their organization was, where it plays into a national scheme, state funding levels. Little was said about this particular site, where this project is. You're charged with making zoning decisions at a county level, and I think it's more applicable to look at this site for exactly what it is. This is basically an overview of where the project is. You can see here there's a vast amount of forest lands that are adjacent to the project. The applicant did mention that it does adjoin the State Pond Trap Park. You'll see the area there to the upper right of the circle now is the actual pond, and you can see the darker area there. All that woodland surrounding that is owned by the state of Delaware. That is the Trap Pond State Park, as well as on the other side at the bottom here, which is Hudson Road runs along here, and the state owns this piece as well as the lands around that and the pond, and I believe the state land runs all the way into the town of Laurel from there as well. Just as a side comment, you'll notice, I know that there was a lot of people in opposition to the first project that were here. What you see in these chambers now, while it may not be the same numbers that were here on the first application, I think percentage-wise, is a vast amount of the people that live in this area, if not everyone that lives in this area. It is a sparsely populated region at this time. There was also some comments about the proximity of the project to services, to the infrastructure that would exist to supplement some of the needs of this community. Just as some side notes, the closest town to this would be the town of Laurel. From the town center, and these distances are taken from, again, my house, which I would estimate is about 100 yards from the entrance to the project, and it was mapped in on MapQuest just to town center. So to the closest town at Laurel, you're 6.28 miles one way. From there, Del Mar, the next closest, over 10 miles. Seaford, over 13 miles. Millsboro, again, over 13. Salisbury, Maryland, which would be a hub for many of the worker, I would assume, many of the jobs that this site would have, over 16 miles, and then Georgetown over 19 miles. Where does that play into what the Community Land Trust has stated? This is taken from their own website, and this says that Diamond State Homes help families live closer to jobs, thereby reducing commuting times, saving fuel and money, and increasing quality of life, like more time spent at home instead of commuting. Seems like that's in direct contradiction with what we just stated about where this project is located. Another comment about where it is. Closest fire department, I know that we mentioned that, as far as the services provided to the community. Again, that being Laurel, it's over 7 miles to the fire department. The result of that, well, pretty obvious if there is a response time delay. As a side note on that as well, the comment about the state farm, or excuse me, the state parks lands that's immediately adjacent to the project, and there are, admittedly by the applicant, 3 lots that adjoin that property. There would be no access to any way to put out a fire on that property if a fire were to spread into that woodlands and decimate over 1,000 acres of woods. So, again, just a concern for neighboring owners. Closest police department, obviously this is outside of municipal jurisdiction, so we're within the state jurisdiction. What the response time would mean for that, obviously that's an unknown because we don't know where the closest officer would be. Again, it's a significant concern for the people there. Before I go any further, something that I didn't incorporate into the site, the project did change a number of times, and it was kind of something as it evolved, we tried to adjust the comments that we were making. Initially, as it was noted, this was a GRRPC application, which it changed to a straight subdivision for an AR1 with the cluster designation. Now, my review indicates that this is now designated as a 2010 application number. So I don't know the actual date that change occurred, but I'm going to assume it did happen in 2010. In any event, I assume it happened after January 1, 2009. The reason I point to that fact is because, as the applicant just admitted in the presentation, they withdrew the prior application and refiled under this application as a cluster. Now, in 2006, the cluster designation in AR1 was amended. And by my review, the superior design criteria that was implemented into Section 115-25 was an applicant could subject themselves to those criteria voluntarily. Now, there's an editor's note directly in the code that says this ordinance also provides that it shall apply to all cluster subdivision applications filed after January 1, 2009. I'm going to suggest that it's mandatory that the applicant comply with those new requirements that are in there at this time. Section 115-25F3D states the cluster development as a criteria, it suggests the cluster development lies within a town center, a developing area, or an environmentally sensitive developing area as described within the land use element and as shown on the future land use plan of the adopted Sussex County Comprehensive Plan. Again, I don't know the date that it changed, but my inclination and my review of this suggests that the council does not have the discretion, or I'm sorry, the commission does not have the discretion to approve this project as a cluster division because of that. Now, that's based on my review. I just wanted to note that it's not incorporated in the slides, just another talking point. In the event that that is not taken into consideration, moving forward, some of the considerations for the project itself. Again, I think I've kind of touched on what else is in the area of this project. This is taken from the county mapping, which designates lot lines. You can kind of see the red lines on this, and I can't move to it with the mouse, I don't believe, at this point, but oh, yes, I can. The project is right here. You can kind of see the lot line that goes around it, and you can see the amount of this that does border the state park and the amount of it that's currently woodlands. The only part of this that's not woodlands is directly in this proximity right here. And there are separate lots out front here which are being developed or built right now or already existing houses on those pieces. The reason that I'm presenting this and not saying that this is just not another not-in-my-backyard kind of argument, which I know that the commission hears quite a few of those, looking directly at the 99-9C requirements and how that might affect the current community. There's 17 enumerated points to look at. I'm not going to touch on all 17, but some of the more key arguments that are made in this with respect to C1, the integration of the proposed subdivision into existing terrain and surrounding landscape. Again, there's some concerns about the proximity of Trap Pond to the project. We did note, and as Mr. Fuqua pointed out, the investment level 4 designation is not a catch-all provision to stop them from making this application, but I think it's prudent for the commission to consider that in the grander scheme of things. So it does lie within an investment level 4. It is an AR property out here, and it is an AR area that is sparsely developed at this time. I think I've noted already that the direct adjacent line of the property to Trap Pond State Park and the effects that that might have. There was some comments made in the PLUS reviews about the concern for hunting rights on that property. The state park does have use of that property for hunting, and there is a buffer requirement for that, but just as a concern to the would-be owners in this community as well because of that. Just a few more points on that. The negative impact on the existing vegetation. Again, this is kind of a pristine area that's maintained for its tourist draw as a sparsely populated rural area that draws people to Trap Pond strictly for that reason. The impact on the wildlife, again, that was commented on in the PLUS comments, and it obviously would impact the wildlife that does exist there. I'm not going to belabor that point. The overburden of the project on adjoining agricultural and preserve lands, just apparent from the density calculations that we're using here in this project. The applicant suggests that 50 homes are going to be put here, and just by way of example, and I won't back up to the map, but when speaking with the neighboring owners in the area and my neighbors, the distance that we had to travel to encompass 50 homes, I would suggest, while I don't have a set calculation, requires a circle with a diameter, if not a radius, of over a mile. So to put 50 homes in this project in this one little location, I would suggest doubles the population of the area. 99-9C2, just moving on to that, the minimal use of wetlands and floodplains. The PLUS application for the projects in response to question 29, while this is the PLUS application that was submitted for the GRRPC designation, the applicant suggested that there was not another submission, so I would take it that these are still applicable. Again, as the applicant suggested, there are non-tidal wetlands on the property, and they admit that they would be disturbing ground within 100 feet of those wetlands. Furthermore, it talks about the intermittent streams on the property and the disturbance of the lands also within 100 feet of that water body. 99-9C3, the preservation of natural and historical features. This is a map that print off, and you can kind of see it in the corner here, that it's from the DNREC website. It's showing a designation of the state resource areas. And again, the project that we're looking at right here is basically in this area, in this dark green right here, which would encompass, I would suggest, what it would appear to be over 90% of the project within that SRA designation. This is taken from the State of Delaware's website. What exactly is an SRA? It's the most important natural open space lands valued for their natural, cultural, and geological significance. They provide wildlife habitat, natural resource-based outdoor activities, outdoor recreation, scenic beauty, conservation of water resources, and buffering or connection of existing public and private lands under conservation management. SRAs are critical in maintaining the quality of life for present and future generations. Why does this matter to us? Well, again, a comment from the website. Ultimately, these SRA maps will inform each county's land use decisions. This is because each county is required to include the SRA maps into their comprehensive land use plans, which set the parameters around which development can occur. So just for consideration, the fact that this does fall within that designation. C4, moving on to that, the preservation of open space and scenic views. Again, I'm going to harp on the proximity of the project at the Trap Pond State Park. Just a photograph of the park, which is, as you saw from the first map, very close to the project site. The park is obviously a tourist draw and attraction for the area, as well as a revenue generator for Sussex County. I believe one of its claims to fame is that it's the northernmost stand of cypress trees or something to that effect. Not that that affects the application, but as another note, there are some scenic bike paths and walking trails that do run through that woodlands that's immediately to the right of the project, if you were looking at the initial map, and they do come quite close to the project, so the scenic views that are being undertaken on these bike paths are going to be impeded by the development of lands, dense development of lands. While I know that the calculations aren't dense within the county's, parameters where they suggest it's 1.1 units per acre, whatever the suggestion was, I still would posit that it has a negative effect on those scenic views. Moving on to C5, the minimization of tree vegetation and soil remover and removal and grade changes. Again, per the PLUS application and per the testimony that was offered before, the present lands that are forested on the site are 38.3 acres. The forest lands to be removed, 23.6, amounts to over 60% of the project that's being removed in an area that's already being protected. The state has dedicated a lot of funds into purchasing the lands around the pond and to preserve the forest area as well as the agricultural uses in the area. Jumping to C8, the provision for sewage disposal. There was a number of comments about the transport of sewage to a facility which I believe is near the Trussum Pond area, which geographically is over a mile from the project. My understanding, while I can't base it on any information to provide to you, is that those sewage facilities at Trussum's Pond were contemplated when there was other developments in the works in that area, which in all likelihood, given the current economy, will never happen. So that site and that facility will likely never be put there. So the sewage disposal, while it may be ideal to maximize more land for forest on the project, I don't think that that's realistic. There was a note, and I kind of want to jump into a side note on this, that there was some comments about the HOA that's to be formed. And I'm going to get on the subject in a different slide, but in my review of the information that was provided, there were no supporting statements with the application for review, so I have not seen a set of restrictive covenants for it. Now, it's been suggested that those are going to be incorporated into the lot leases, but with a community like this, it is unique, and it does cause a lot of uncertainty, and with a typical community like this, it would be an HOA created to take ownership of the roads and maintenance for the roads. Well, what I've heard and what I seem to understand is that the land trust is going to own all the lots and the benefit from that, but they're going to pass ownership of the roads, the cemetery, the clubhouse, everything else to the HOA to maintain. Well, again, if the sewage facility, whether it's a direct expense for maintenance or if it's an expense through the increased cost through Tidewater, that's still a concern given the low income that the people that are living in this community are going to have. So a concern for the neighboring owners, the increased expense of that and possible degradation of that sewage disposal facility, along with the related effects that that would have on the adjoining agricultural lands and the flow of water through to trap pump. I touched on this point, just the inability of lower income occupants to adequately fund for the repairs, again, some HOA concerns. My inclination at this point would be to suggest that the commission, it would be inappropriate to approve the application with not allowing the public to comment on the supporting statements that were supposed to be provided. 99-C9, moving on to that, the prevention of pollution of surface and groundwater, kind of the same topic again, the possible long-term instability of sewage disposal. For anyone that lives in the area or has seen the area, particularly given the past year with rainfalls, there's a high water table, and that's evident given the ponds that are in the area, that the water table is never going to drop too low below that. So there is a lot of standing water. Wooten Road, which runs right in front of the project, is closed down by the state a number of times a year. When the water actually crops over the road, you can't get down that road without basically a lifted truck to get through there. So they will put out, and it may still be there now, their little cones and stuff to block that road off. The reason I suggest that, again, is just increasing the impervious surface on this site. While I know that they're suggesting to use some manner of cobblestone walkways or something to that effect, it still will create impervious surface, and it still will increase the water runoffs in the area. The surface discharge that they're suggesting is going to discharge into the wetlands in the back. Again, the effect on neighboring state lands as well as Trap Pond and the effect of the waterways that connect with Trap Pond. 99-9C12, the effect on area property values. I kind of find it laughable that the discussion came up multiple times and it seemed to be skated repeatedly about what the effect would be on neighboring property values. While we can say till we're blue in the face that it won't be used as a comparable sale, comparable sales are a term of art that's used in the appraising industry. That has nothing to do with the effect of area property values. As a practical matter, the presence of these homes will have a negative impact on our property values. What is significant here and has has been, it's been alluded to, a number of the homes in the area are in the 3,000 to 5,000 square foot range plus. The home that is, and I don't know if the owner of the home is present here tonight, but the one that is immediately next to the entrance of this community, by my best inclination, would be over 5,000 square feet. So by the calculations of the homes that are going to be put in this project, whether they be the numbers of 1,000 to 2,000 and using a range in there, you're talking about a significant decrease. The property values of $125,000 won't even come close to encompassing the values of the properties that are on the outside of this project and on the immediately neighboring property to this. I would suggest that the marketability of the existing homes depends upon the presence of similar homes and not the presence of this kind of home. I think it is a clear, while I don't have any statistic or factual analysis to point to, I think common sense suggests that the presence of these homes in the $125,000 range or less can't help what we have already out there. A number of comments were made about these kind of communities being an incentive for people to own homes and to take value in property. I would suggest that, number one, by my understanding of the dynamic here in this current economy, you'd have to be a fool to buy into this because you don't get your appreciation in your home when you sell it. But not only that, given that structure, you don't own the land, and you're only going to get a set amount of the appreciation in the home. There is a table that's offered in the home buyer's manual that's produced by the Delaware State Land Trust that suggests a comparison of a home purchased by the land trust and a home purchased on the open market for the same prices. And while it offers the numbers, the clear indication at the bottom line is that that homeowner who was bought in the open market will end up better at the end of the day, at least by my interpretation of those numbers. Why would there not be an incentive to do anything in the community? Well, if I don't own the land and I can't capitalize on the appreciation in that home, then once I hit that cap, that point where I know I won't get any more money, what incentive do I have to maintain my property or to upkeep or improve my property when I know that I'm just building equity and ownership rights for the land trust to take from me? The results of that, in my opinion, would be a blighted community. Again, you don't have that incentive to improve anything here. You have in fact, a disincentive to do anything to your property other than maintain the status quo. Where that's going to impact the neighboring owners, obviously, again, I think that all of us are going to suffer and bear the results as property values continue to increase over time. I think that the results of this mathematical equation are only going to be aggravated and exponentially aggravated in application. So jumping now to C13, the preservation and conservation of farmlands. I believe there's a number of people in the audience here today who are farmers in the neighboring communities. While it was mentioned about job markets, I think it was suggested in some of the application materials that this site was being put in a rural setting because there's a need for people to have an open, close access to farming jobs. I would suggest that there's a number of people in the community that can speak more directly on that, but I wouldn't suspect that there is a single job for anybody in the area of this project any closer than the town centers where it would be more appropriate. In the, again, not going back to the map, but in the area to the upper left-hand side, there is a farm that's owned, and I believe the owners of the farm are here today, that can testify. The clubhouse for the project, I believe, as it's proposed, along with the barbecue area, the tennis courts and all that, that little corner that's cut out right there is a field for farming purposes. The presence of that facility right there cannot be good for that farmer on that corner of that property, nor could the whole site be good to the forested lands that are owned by the state on the other side. Again, I believe that the interest should be on preserving our county's most notable agriculturally and environmentally important lands. I think that the Trap Pond site and the immediately surrounding areas are crucial to be protected at this point. Again, not to belabor the point, but the project invades on the rural area with precisely the type of project that's legislatively intended to be inappropriate for this type of location. Just to touch briefly on the effect of the project on schools, public buildings, and community facilities, the Office of State Planning Coordination, in response to the PLUS application, made a couple comments. One of those was, the project as proposed is likely to bring more than 122 new residents to an area where state has no plans to invest in infrastructure upgrades or additional services. Again, while I note that the designation as an investment level 4 area is not directly, it can't be used as a dispositive point on the denial or approval of the application, it is relevant in the sense that it applies to these other requirements as well. The residents will need access to such services and infrastructure as schools, police, and transportation. Another quote from the same comments, although this project may provide a short-term solution over the long term, the unseen negative ramifications of this development will become even more evident as the community matures and costs of maturing infrastructure and providing services increases. Again, it just backs up on the point that I think I made, that my inclination is that over time, the negative effects of this community are only going to get aggravated. 99-9C15, another big point that was there was a little bit of dancing around the subject, and there weren't specific numbers that were offered by the applicant, but what the effect of the project will be on area roadways and public transportation. As admitted in the applicant's PLUS application, again, for the GRRPC designation, it will generate additional traffic. So by what measure, which was not provided before? The suggestion is that there's going to be 550 additional vehicle trips per average peak seasonal workday. I don't know the specific numbers right now. I know I've heard the number used before, that there's somewhere in the realm of 90 now. I would suggest that 90 is even an optimistic number living on this street and recognizing what comes up and down this road. I think you're looking at least 6, more likely 10 times the amount of traffic in this area by the presence of this project. What effect this has? Well, if you visited this site or haven't had any reason to be out near this project, and you've ridden up and down those roads, you could well recognize that you could knock your teeth out coming up and down some of them. I would say a good portion of the roads are...
Is that your car in the hole there?
If it helps the application, Mr. Chairman, yes.
I think it might be Mr. Fuquay's, huh?
Again, the suggestion is that they are in a state of disrepair now. Again, the designation as an investment level 4 area means that there will not be improvements funded into this. I know that there was a suggestion that there would be some funding or improvements would be made by the developer. the developer is not going to improve roads between this project and Laurel and this project in Georgetown. And those roads are all back roads that connect these municipalities to this project. So while the roads in the community may be nice, eventually they're going to have to come out of there and suffer the consequences of unmarked, narrow roads that are in a state of disrepair already. 99-9C16, the compatibility with other area land uses. I've touched on this a little bit about the surrounding homes and the surrounding land values. Again, I don't want to belabor that point, but this is a very rural setting, and it's an area that's been protected for its for that very reason. It's an area that the state has dedicated a lot of funding into buying the woodlands and things like that. The surrounding homes in this area, many of which were built within the last 5 years, are of a much higher caliber than what's being proposed to be put on this site and will suffer the consequences of the presence of the site. Nearing the end here, 99-9C17, the effect on area waterways. Again, I've touched on the point a number of times about the proximity of the project to Trap Pond. Trap Pond is not too far from Raccoon Pond, which connects into it and then feeds all the way down to the Nanticoke and ultimately out to the bay. The concern, again, is that the effect of the discharge of the proposed site, the impervious surfaces, the sewage, all those risks that present a lot of unknowns, and the applicant has admitted many times that there's a lot of uncertainties with the application at this point. Now, I do understand it's a preliminary application, but some of those issues need to be breached early on because they can't be fixed later. The effect on the ecosystem surrounding Trap Pond, it's not just the pond itself that that needs support there, it's the areas around it. Just a general comment, I think this was cited by Mr. Fruquay, I'm not sure if it was or not, but just as stated in the subdivision ordinance of Sussex County, the general purpose of what it is, it's established to promote and protect the health, safety, convenience, orderly growth, and welfare of the citizens of the county, to assist in the proper development, conservation of property values, and use of land in the county, to encourage the preservation and conservation of farmland, and to assure that future schools and other public buildings, community facilities, residential developments, and commercial and industrial areas will be conveniently and properly located. I think that sums up what this project does not. So I would suggest that it directly contradicts the stated purpose of the county zoning ordinance. How it plays into the comprehensive plan, the preface of the Sussex County comprehensive plan, updated June 2008, as it was indicated before. It's expressly noted that the future growth and preservation goals of Sussex County are to direct development to areas within or near community services. We've stressed the point that this is extremely far from those services. There is no cable internet out at this location. There is no there's no cable television. It's satellite everything. We don't have those services out there, let alone the actual necessary services, police, fire, school, all those things. The closest grocery store, I would suggest, is over 6 miles as well. The goal, again, of the comprehensive plan to conserve the county's agricultural economy and the value of its farmlands. Again, I would suggest that this project does exactly the opposite. Protect critical natural resources. I don't think that we could define a more critical natural resource than the area surrounding Trap Pond, again, given the state's already pointed efforts to protect that area. Encourage tourism and other responsible job providers. The tourism industry of Trap Pond, there's few draws on the western side of the county for tourism. Obviously, everything is to the eastern side of the county. And I would suggest that this is one of those draws, and this project could not serve to help that purpose. Now, at this point, expand affordable housing opportunities. The applicant might again suggest that they're doing just that, and that's a support for them. Again, I would take the opposite view of this, that this project in this location is doing no favors and no services to the people that would potentially live here. These low-income people, which the tables were suggested, just to give a more comprehensive outline of the numbers, as I understand the application, the income restriction for the applicants is 80% of the adjusted median income or lower. So 80% is the high mark. And these numbers as the high mark from Sussex County, and this is coming from the Home Buyer's Manual, again, for the Diamond State Land Trust, and these are 2009 numbers. As a one-person family, $32,850. A two-person family, $37,500. Three-person, $42,200. Four-person, $46,900. Five-person, $50,650. Six, $54,400. Seven, $58,150. And eight, $61,900. On the higher end of that, you can see the discrepancy of what it would actually take to support that family at $61,900. Now, the irony of the situation is that there was an applicant in here earlier that had some comments that were made by, I believe it was the Rehoboth Community Land Trust, and it's been suggested that that's a similar motive. If you really think back to the comments that were made by the opposition to that about drug use and the negative effects of that area, I think you should assimilate those comments to what this project could potentially bring to this area as well. It's not something that should be put this far from the services that can be provided to alleviate those concerns for the neighboring owners. Some additional concerns, just on some side notes. The supporting statements, as I'd noted, that are required by 99-24 were not available in my review. I wasn't able to concretely determine any kind of restrictions on the community and how that might interplay with the fact that this is something that I haven't had any exposure to and am unfamiliar with. I have represented and do represent a number of condo associations and homeowners associations, and I know how that might play out, but I do not know how this is going to play out in this situation given the land lease dynamic. And also, furthermore, I don't know that those land leases would necessarily accomplish the same effect as those declaration restrictions, the covenants, codes, and restrictions, and things of that nature would. It's noted multiple times that this is a good starting point for people to get into the market, get a home, value home ownership. I'd suggest that it's nothing more than a jumping point. And again, backing up to my concerns that this is a first step for home ownership. This is not a home that or a community that people are going to truly take pride in. It's a means for them to reach an end. It's a means for them to reach their goal. They're not going to get the appreciation. They don't have the incentive to make the improvements that are actually going to better the area. And I've noted those points. Again, just a few more. I promise I'm nearing the end, as you can tell from the application materials I presented. The continued stability of the community is a concern. I've touched on the point of the HOA. Again, you know, it was commented on about the gravesite here and how that would be maintained and the fact that that would be an HOA responsibility to maintain a gravesite. Anybody that's worked with an HOA, particularly in this economy, knows that there's a lot of people in the communities that will alleviate those payments for dues as a first step in cutting their bills. So when that happens, the HOA is entitled to a statutory lien on the property. So what happens when the HOA forecloses on that lien and enters the sheriff's sale as a potential buyer? What happens if a judgment is entered against one of these homeowners and somebody goes to the sheriff's sale to buy that property? They're not an income qualified applicant, so that means now you have somebody in this community that's buying this property not by their criteria, and it removes it from their structure. So what happens then to the dynamic of the entire community? Well, without any kind of restrictions in place, I have no idea how that would fall into the interplay of the entire situation. Again, the limited buyer base, again, backing up on property values, it's a concern for all of us because you've significantly limited the buyer pool for the people that are entering this community. And with stagnant market times on homes as one of the top concerns for the appraisal values in the areas, the fact that you're now cutting out a significant portion of the people that may buy these properties is going to, in my opinion, drop the property values even lower in this area. Also, the Community Land Trust has admitted that they're a new organization. This is a new movement. They stressed, again, the national levels and the national effect. Well, I don't think it's appropriate in any regard, at any level, for them to make this application in a rural setting and make us the test subjects to something that is destined for failure. The national results, there's no inclination that those results are applicable to this situation. The success of this community seems contingent in large effect on the stability of a nonprofit organization, which already depends on taxpayer dollars and on the donations that are given to it. What happens if that organization is not generating the revenue from those sources any longer? Well, I would suggest that, again, the community falls by the wayside at that point. Where's the funding? I don't mean to suggest this slide to make any kind of inclination that the neutrality of the commission is in question. I merely suggest that, as noted previously, $50,000 was given by the county to the Diamond State Community Land Trust. That gift in and of itself, in my honest opinion as the author of this, is a misappropriation of funds for the community to dedicate, the land trust to dedicate those funds, if in part or at all, to this project, knowing that it's not serving the needs and the goals that this community has sold itself to benefit. So I would encourage the commission not only to question this application, but also to question grants to the organization, given the orientations that it has as far as its buying power. Funding partners, again, on the Diamond State Community Land Trust, this point has been made. The Sussex County is listed as actually a partner with the land trust. What's in a name? Ending point here. Not to make too light of a point of this, but the name is chosen for this community, New Horizons Community. What's in that name? Well, maybe adding my own impositions to what that name is. It's new because people are new beginning. They're starting, as they suggested, they're starting their way in life. They're getting this home. Horizons, they're trying to reach an end. Well, what would have a similar name? You may not recognize that slide, but that's a picture of the Deepwater Horizons rig that's in the Gulf. Well, oil and water don't mix. This project and this location is not appropriate. It's outside the services. You can't stop problems. It's too far from the resources. It's not appropriate here. I'm not opposed to affordable housing. I'm not opposed to the motives of the organization. They need to apply their resources and make their applications in appropriate settings. Just as a final note, and I think that this point is going to be covered, but in the instance that it's not, the applicant suggested the selection of this site because it met certain pricing points. I think there's a copy of the contract for the purchase in the file for planning and zoning, and I may be misstating the facts, so I state this with some reservation, but I believe it was purchased at $17,500 an acre, being the resulting price. By current calculations, it certainly doesn't seem like a bargain for property, given what I know of what you can obtain property closer to municipalities for. So I just note that as a final point. And that's all I have for you. I apologize that it took somewhat long to go through that, and certainly answer any questions if there are any, or if not, I can get out of your hair.
All right, sir. We thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, who else would like to speak in opposition? Yes, ma'am. Keep you and then you, sir. Okay, you'll be next.
Hi, my name is Carol Sue Crimmins. I'm a real estate broker, and I'm a landowner on Wooten Road. And I would like to start with a couple questions. Is that all right?
You can ask me, and if
okay,
I'll try to get an answer for you, maybe.
One of the statements that was made, and I might have misunderstood it, so if I did, I apologize. Was it was going to take $11 million to fund this project. $8 million of it was going to come from the sales of the property. Well, that makes an average sales price of $160,000 on 50 homes, not $115,000 to $125,000. So I didn't know if I missed something because I was writing or not.
I'll find out. Go ahead.
Okay. My other concern or question is about the land trust ownership in the HOA. I guess that the paperwork isn't available for that yet. So before this would get approved, I would definitely like to see that paperwork. The land lease says it's $40 a month, a lot, which is $24,000 a year. But that doesn't cost anything, or that doesn't cover any of the cost on the HOA side. So $100,000 home at 5% is about $537 a month, not counting taxes, not counting the HOA, not counting the land lease. So it's kind of getting it outside the realm of affordability, in my opinion. I give you this because this is what I've been working on. I'm very methodical. So my items of concern, I started with the application package, and I went with what was provided on site. So if it's changed, I'm not aware of that.
Okay.
Item 27 of the environmental pact says they're going to remove, that there's 38 acres of forest land. They're going to remove 23. That leaves 14 acres. But if the building is proposed on 10.57 acres, why is there such a loss in the forestry? In other words, they're saying that this property is, or this lot is 42.17 acres, but they're actually building on 10.57 acres, which includes roads, buildable area for the lots, which is 125,000 square feet, and the amenities. So that takes the average buildable per space lot down to less than 0.5 of an acre. That's from their site plan, which I got a lot of headaches trying to read. I don't really have a problem with this project. What I have a problem with is When I bought my lot, it was 3/4 of an acre. I had a minimum build of 1,800 square feet, and the builder, the seller, had to approve what I was putting up. I had to put up my own well and septic. This, my property actually is along, it's lot 3 on Wooten, so it actually runs on the Wooten side of the property. The standards that are going to be, or the characteristics that are going to be in this community, don't even compare to what we have back there. If you flip to page 2, I did a 3-mile radius from the entrance, and I actually used my property because it was 350 feet away. From January 2005 to June yesterday, there's been 36 lots sold. Several of them have sold several times. So for the purpose of this report, I only did one sale. I didn't count it double because that's not fair. One of the homes had a 1,600 square foot requirement, stick built only, no modulars or mobiles. Two had a 1,700 square foot minimum build, stick built only, no modulars or mobiles. One was 1,700 and it had to have a 2-car garage, a brick foundation, builder approval, I mean seller approval of the plans. Two are 1,800 square feet, stick or modular, seller to approve the plan. 12 were 1,800 square feet, stick or modular build, no mobiles, and 4 were 1,800 square feet, stick or modular. There were 8 out of the 36 that didn't note any restrictions. It doesn't mean they were there. It just might mean that the realtor did not put them in the MLS. These numbers that I'm giving you are from the Sussex County Multiple Listing Service, so they don't include any private deals or FSBOs for sale by owners. There was one parcel that was 28.92 acres, and there was 3 parcels that range from 29 to 75 acres, and none of those included any restriction. The proposed community, in my opinion, does not blend with the surrounding area. The lots and house sizes are very small in comparison to the surrounding homes. The home that's directly at the entrance is my neighbor. It's 5,800 square feet. My house is 2,600 square feet. On the next couple pages, you're going to see all the homes that are built on Wooten and Hudson since 2005, and for the most part, the breakdown. The average lot size is 0.75 acres. Each lot was required to have a well and septic. Each house had to be a minimum of 1,700. I think there was one exception to that, and that was 1,400, but they probably have a shed that's the same size as the house on the lot. Most of them had to be stick or modular. And based on the site plans that I looked at, their average lot size is 0.22 acres, and the average home size, although their website says 1,300 and change, and I believe they were saying 1,500, based on their plans, their average home size is 1,120 square feet. That's not even half of what most of the other homes are in there. I think when you're trying to make a decision about this, one of the things that needs to come into consideration is, are there similar concepts? Yes, there are nationally, but in our county, there's one that's very close. I think it's about 14 miles away. It's similar in that it's a land lease operation, and it's off Hitch Pond Circle. The project began in 1996. The number of homes upon completion are supposed to be 640. After 14 years of building, they're 34%. They have 218 homes. That's my fear. I own a home. I have a couple $100,000 in it. You know, just build it to the same standards as everybody else. I don't know that they're going to be around in 14 years. The ground rent at this property, which is similar, it's a land lease. It includes water, sewer, trash, which theirs will not, is $335 a month. Average, not 40, not 50, not even 100. Their average lot size in that community is 6,700 as opposed to 7,500. And their average home size, which again, on their website is 1,300, but according to their plan site is 1,100. This similar concept, their 2 bedrooms run 1,500. Their three bedrooms run 1,600, and their four bedrooms are 2,100.
Ms. Grimmon, I'm going to ask you to kind of get to the summary, okay?
All right, in here.
Appreciate very much the research you've done, and we will take it under consideration. But if you could, in reference to your neighbors here.
The photos of the homes that surround it are here in the square foot. And there are 13 alternate parcels available. They range from $245,000 to over $4 million, and the list price per square foot is there. There are at least three that are well under $17,000 per square foot. So, do you have any questions? But those were mine. If we could get those answered, that'd be great.
Thank you. Mr. Fuquay, the question, or Mr. Van Temple, the question regarding how the math worked out on the build out. I remembered hearing the $11 million number. I didn't really remember hearing the eight, but I'm sure you probably said it. And do you, if you want to respond to Ms. Crimmins' comment about how the math works out, I'm giving you the opportunity to do so.
I was giving some general ballpark numbers about what the overall project will cost. I'm rounding to $11 million.
Okay.
It's sometime in the future. We don't know how long it would take to build out and so forth, interest costs. And the point I was trying to make is that the ratio of about $8 million to $11 is what the sales proceeds would be to the project cost.
Okay. All right, then. Thank you. All right, who's next? Who else would like? Yes, sir, you're next. That's right. We already knew the answer to that. I'm sorry.
For the record, my name is Bill Whaley. And when I say I'm going to be brief, I mean it. I grew up in the Trap Pond area, and I presently live in the Trap Pond area. I live on Wooden Road, down from where the development's being proposed. I'm not here to judge Diamond State. Maybe they have a noble project here. But they picked the absolute worst place they could to try to squeeze this in. I would like to refer to the comprehensive plan again. I remember in 07, leading up to the construction of the comprehensive plan that we're now under, there was a lot of talk all over this county. They wanted that stopped. And I think what was certified by the state and signed by the governor in 08 does exactly that. Once you get through the introductory part of the comprehensive plan, it basically states eight directives where future growth should go. The first one is areas in proximity to municipalities and municipal annex areas. This is obviously in contrast with that one. Number two is areas with the presence of existing public sewer and water. Obviously, it doesn't work. The third one is areas where the plans by the county to provide public sewer within 5 years. I haven't seen anything where they plan to do that. The fourth one is areas located near a major road. Wooden and Hudson Road aren't major roads. Areas with similar character and intensity of development. Well, we've just seen there's no match there. Number six is not in areas relative to a major preserved lands. Again, total 180-degree contrast. Number seven is consider land's environmental character, which I think is in line with number six as well. And then the last one is consider how the area ranks at the state level, which is level one, two, three, or four. Of course, this is level four, and it's been stated before, that the state's intent is to discourage additional development in level four areas. Out of the eight criteria from the 2008 comprehensive plan, this does not fit into even one of them. It contrasts with all eight of them. So I'm just here tonight to urge you to deny this application. Thank you.
All right, sir. We thank you. Who's next? Young lady in the green right up front. And then the gentleman in yellow all the way in the back. You'll be next. Don't let me forget.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Monet Whaley Smith. And unlike the ladies and gentlemen who spoke in favor of this project, I live directly across the street from this proposed project on Wooden Road. Right here. I'm going to submit a few documents for your review. The first one is the income limits proposed by Diamond State Community Land Trust from their website. The
The next one is from Denrec, stating that all of these areas have been designated as natural areas. And then the last one is just a summary of my comments this evening, so I can hopefully skip through some of it and not bore everyone to death. And there's a copy for each person. As a young professional, a member of the Trap Pond community, and as a first-time homeowner that resides across the street from the proposed development property, my husband and I respectfully and adamantly oppose the project for many reasons, of which you've already heard. In an attempt to keep things brief this evening, that's why I've given you the summary of my comments. Again, the PLUS application I reviewed was a request for changing the zonal identities, so I'm going to skip through some of this that is not applicable. If I start talking about something that is not, please just stop me. The current AR1 district that this land is identified is specifically states that it's to protect agricultural lands as one of the county's most valuable natural resources from the depreciating effect of objectable uses. Goes on to say these districts are also intended for protection of watersheds, water resources, forest areas, and scenic values, such as Trap Pond State Park. And then the AR regulations seek to prevent untimely scattering of more dense urban uses, which should be confirmed to areas planned for efficient extension of public services. This proposed construction location is unmistakably not compatible with the proposed subdivision. Primarily, this subdivision does not accurately conform to or meet the requirements of Sussex County Code Chapter 99, Section 9C, which we very thoroughly reviewed. It does not consistently integrate into the pre-existing terrain and surrounding area landscape of our community. It's inconsistent with the strategies for state policies and spending, and it is in clear opposition to the goals outlined in the Sussex County Comprehensive Plan, again, of which I have a copy of. We've reviewed it. I'm sure you guys know it by heart, so I'm not going to go through that for you either. And in addition to proposing the clear cutting of 23.6 acres, which a gentleman earlier said is very comparable to the acres of land that Trap Pond State Park had cleared, but I'd like to point out that Trap Pond State Park cleared 20.7 acres out of the 2,685 acres of land that they own, which calculated to be about 0.007% of their total property, where this project is clearing 56% of the total property that they'll be building on. It does border, again, directly border Trap Pond State Park, and it will impact the delicate environment. The developer is proposing a hardship on the future residents of the development by locating it so far from town centers. Additionally, as per the responses to the PLUS application, the subdivision is not supported by the Office of State Planning, the Department of Transportation, the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Control, the Department of Agriculture, the Delaware Division of Public Health, or Sussex County. The project is located, as we know, in a Level 4 investment area. Furthermore, as a homeowner who is going to be, again, this is my home. This is where I plan to live for a long time. It's not a jumping point for me. I'll be living across the street from this project long after the bulldozers are gone, long after the shiny new image has faded, and long after the developers have wiped their hands of the project. My family and our neighbors will be faced with a negative effect to our property values, with the progressive destruction of our critical farmland and wetlands, with the added demise of our currently battered roadways, which Mike had talked about previously. When we had the massive snow this past winter, it was 4 days before DelDOT even got down our road. Most of us could not get out at all. It was an additional 10 days before you could get down the road without a four-wheel drive vehicle. And the areas you leave this property and turn left that goes through Trap Pond, numerous trees had fallen and covered the property, and this is the same area that floods every time it rains. You would not be able to leave this development and take a left. That was probably for a good another 2 weeks after the snow had finally cleared up. And then also with traffic increases nearly 5 times greater than what we're currently experiencing. Our road is a glorified bike path. I don't know if you've ever ridden down there, but there's no lines on the road. There's no shoulder. I just can't see us increasing the amount of traffic 5 times. There's a ton of potholes on the road, and the state of Delaware has no intentions of ever improving our roadway. If the developer does improve part of the roadway, it'll be for a portion of space immediately leaving the property. Again, as pointed out, it won't be all the way to town. Because the developers proposed the property be contingent as a land lease agreement, there are additional layers of adverse effects to the existing community and the future residents of the proposed development. You can read through my remarks, and there's been question or whether or not there is going to be a negative effect on
current homeowners. But Brown University actually did a study of the effects of low-income housing on neighborhoods in December of 2008. Clearly, Brown University is not hired by us. It wasn't hired by the developer, so I would consider them to be a neutral party. They revealed the following facts regarding low-income developments: that there's a significant increase in turnover of owner-occupied households, that it creates a declining median area income of up to a 21.5% decrease in gentrifying areas, that it does provide an increase in surrounding rental units, and that these projects induce a downward shift in neighborhood desirability. They did find that median home values increased at times, and that was when the project was located in areas near the qualifying threshold and in neighborhoods with similar characteristics that are near declining, less desirable metropolitan areas. And the increase in the home values were always based on future estimates. So, as not to repeat what has already been said and what in the future will be brought to your attention this evening, I'd like to conclude by saying that the basic foundation for a community land trust development, and it's been admittedly pointed out tonight, that it is to restrict future appreciation. That's the whole idea and concept of a community land trust. This proposal is considered to me to be a leapfrog style of development. It's moving constantly outwards from city and town centers, and it presents many challenges. The project is wrong for current and future homeowners in the area, wrong for the preservation and attraction of Trap Pond State Park, and wrong for the numerous reasons mentioned to you this evening. So I hope you will vote in our favor and decline the application on the merits that have been presented, and thank you so much for your time this evening.
Thank you, ma'am. All right, sir, you're up.
My name is Lee Collins. I live at 14272 Wooten Road. I am a small farmer and a school bus contractor, and I wanted to state for the record that our farm is on Wooten Road. We farm our land. We spread manure. We use pesticides. We use chemicals. We run irrigation pumps. We are fully committed to agriculture. By approving this development, you are allowing people that have no knowledge at all of agriculture to come down here, complain, and try and change our way of life. So we ask from the farmers in the Wooten Road area to deny the application because it does not fit in with the infrastructure that we have there. We are an agricultural area, not a residential area. And I thank you for your time.
All right, sir. We thank you. Okay, who's next? Yes, ma'am.
This is a little rickety, so forgive me if it falls apart on the way up there. I should have invested in something a little more sturdy.
You can just use our easel.
Use ours if you want.
Well, I think it might topple over sometimes with how tall this thing is.
Thanks, Dad. Good evening, gentlemen. My name is Diane Calloway. I own property at 14937 Wooten Road. My property is bordered on two sides by the proposed development. If you look at the parcel here, my property is right here in front of the existing cemetery. I'm sorry, you guys can't
see
that.
Sorry, it's fine. We know where it is.
A lot of my topics have already been covered, which is good. It saves me from having to sit up here and belabor all the issues. However, I did want to point out some of the facts when it comes to what the current home values are of some of the homes that are being built in this area. My home is currently under construction. My construction loan, which is for the house only, not the cost of the land, was $255,625. So if that gives you any comparison as to what the home values of the homes in this general area are, I'd like to offer that for the record. In addition, I'd like to also offer, if I may, a couple letters, I believe there's six, from residents in the area who unfortunately were unable to be here tonight. If I may, Mr. Lank, approach.
Up to Mr. Lank, please.
Thank you.
They will become part of the record. We will be keeping those in the file.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much. And I apologize, I only have three copies of my wonderful technologically advanced display here for the record and for your use.
Thanks.
Only three of us can read anyway.
So.
I very seldomly get to use my art minor, so I was trying to delve back to this. One of the points that I wanted to make is, as many of the residents here and as many as the speakers, we grew up in this area. From as a crow flies, I literally grew up a mile from this area, and this is where I'm raising my family, and this is I want to be buried, literally, if I'm allowed, in that cemetery behind our house. We plan on living in this house. It's our dream house. We're fortunate that we were able to build it at the time of our lives that we have, and this is where we want to live for the rest of our lives. My connection to the area, I learned to swim at Trepp Pond, I learned to bike at Trepp Pond, I learned how to climb trees at Trepp Pond, and I just want to bring about the importance of Trepp Pond as a tourist destination for western Sussex County. The Trepp Pond area actually has been designated as the terminus of the Western Sussex Byway Program, which whole mission is to keep the area free of contemporary suburban developments and commercialism. Also, the state, in conjunction with the National Transportation Enhancements Program, has already put in $1.46 million towards the bike path, which goes around Trepp Pond. So there's been significant investment in preserving the natural landscape of the area. As I said, a lot of the items in my presentation have been covered already, so I'm going to flip through real quick. I don't want to insult anyone's intelligence. A lot of my quotes come from the plus comments and the plus response, so I urge you to read through the copies of the presentation that I provided so that we don't have to belabor those issues any further. One of the items I wanted to point out, these photos were taken from the Delaware Data Mill. They range, they were the aerial photos taken from starting in 1937 all the way to the most recent of 2007. As you can see, this area was completely wooded with the exception of the area that is now strip lots ever since aerial photos were taken that we have record of, at least that the state does. So I urge you, as you know, an environmentalist and as a homeowner, to preserve these delicate lands that we have. I really wish I wouldn't have wasted my time cramping my hands as I would all these. And as you, more than welcome to read through, those are the Reader's Digest version of the most interesting topics I found in the plus comments and the plus comment response. In addition to the six letters that I wanted to put in for public record, I also wanted to add a copy of DenRec's response to the developer's response, which goes into more depth of what Monet was just talking about its defense on the area and the amount of woods that was cleared recently for Trepp Pond. So I'd also like, and I've highlighted it for you, all the most important parts, if I could also add that to the record.
Sure.
Okay. In addition, a couple new items have been added tonight from the applicant. There's been apparently a revised data column, which may negate some of the points that I'm about to make. But according to the PLUS application, the target homeowner for this project was listed as 20 homes of first-time home buyers and 30 of move-up buyers for a total of 50 units. It seems to me that the goal of the Diamond State Land Trust is more to target the first-time home buyers, since they're assuming that there's the need for the affordable housing and not necessarily a move-up buyer, which Mikey pointed out earlier. I had a little bit of a difference with calculating the net density of the project compared to what the site plan that was submitted was. As Mr. Fuqua and Mr. Couples mentioned, that the net density is 1.18. From what I calculated, starting with the 42.17 acres of the land, which does not include the strip lots, if you take away all the lands that are either protected in easements, in buffers, or in right-of-way, which are undevelopable lands when you start it, if you look, I've colored the red areas around the perimeter. Those are lands that they couldn't touch if they wanted to because of various ecological or wetlands or items of that nature. If you take all that out, I get a density of 1.54 units. So, like I said, a new data table has been submitted, so this might not be applicable anymore. But I just thought, and I was overly conservative with my numbers, so I would like the commission, if you can, to just take a double look at that just to make sure that whatever they've submitted is actually still valid. Here's the color. I wanted to touch real lightly on a crime issue, which is my husband is a police officer, and of course crime is what he deals with on a daily basis. We were unable to obtain any data from the state police, which we had the jurisdiction over this area. However, we were able to get data on the town of Millsboro, which has quite a few different low-income targeted communities. If you look, the subdivisions that are in color on the top are random subdivisions within the area. The total amount of complaints per unit per year on the top is less than 0.5 per unit. If you look at the two low-income areas or villages, apartments that are at the bottom, which are income dependent, they're an average of 1.9 complaints per unit per year, which means that almost two complaints per every house, apartment, in each of those subdivisions is, they're being affected every year by that, which is a huge disparity compared to the rest of the subdivisions in the area. As Mikey pointed out, I have a real concern as a homeowner in the adjoining properties of what the condition of the amenities, infrastructure, and homes are going to be in the future.
This person you keep referring to.
Hi, Brian. He's watching from home right now.
Well, if you keep referring to somebody named Mikey.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mikey and Scott and quite a few of the people in this room, we all graduated from high school together. He's always going to be Mikey to me. Sorry.
Just for the record, you are indicating Attorney Smith, right?
Yes. Yes, I am. I'm sorry,
okay.
Mikey.
Just wanted to make sure we knew who you were talking about.
Yes. Attorney Smith. I'm sorry.
Fine.
We got it now.
We're good. Mikey.
We won't forget.
We won't forget either.
I guess I'm not invited to your next barbecue, huh? As I was mentioning, I have a real concern from an issue of the infrastructure in the area. The typical lifespan of a roadway is usually 15 to 20 years before there's some kind of patching that needs to be done, and I have a real concern as to whether or not the homeowners and the formed homeowners association are going to have the type of finances to be able to support in 20 years what happens to the development. And as an adjoining landowner, I have a real a question as to what the condition of the community garden is going to be. I know my garden's full of weeds. Mr. Ross's garden's full of weeds. So I'm not trying to speculate on what will happen, but, you know, I just have a real concern as to what the status of everything's going to be in 20 years from now. And just as an aside, I'm not sure if the owner of the property is at the current owner of the property, Mrs. West, is here in the audience or not, but I just wanted to let her know and the commission know that should this application be denied, it's not being an infringement on either developer or on the current homeowner, because the current homeowner has other options for selling the land, which could make it into either a state purchase or other organizations. And I'd like to point out the wonderful Sussex County Land Preservation Guide, which lists lots of agencies which might be interested in purchasing this land because of its proximity to natural areas. And I also wanted to say that given Mrs. Crimmins' detailed report on everything of different parcels that are for sale in the area, there would be other parcels located closer to municipalities and existing infrastructure that, should this be denied, the developer could look into. And for that, I'd like to thank you for your time and invite whoever's next up. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, back there in the blue shirt. Already on your feet anyway. You might as well come on up here.
Good evening. My name's Tom Elliott. I live on Arvey Road at the south end of Hudson Road. I've been a Delaware trooper for 20 and a half years. I can tell you about the services that are out there from my own experience. Last year, 2 years ago, 5:30 in the morning, I'm returning home from a call out. I hit a deer 1 mile from my house on Hudson Road. I called the troop on the radio, 45 minutes for me as a trooper just to get somebody there at 5 in the morning. I can speak on a fire call, my neighbor who was here. Two fires, at minimum, at least 20 to 22 minutes response time to his residence for two woods fires. He also had an ambulance car, was the elderly father. That was an hour time frame. So it's remote. The services are not there. And the last thing I'll say, the roads, I drive Wooten Road to Georgetown every day. I don't know who's driven it. I don't know, Marty, if you've driven on Wooten Road. The road is settled. It's underwater a lot. So That's what I like to say. Thank you.
All right, sir. Well, thank you. Okay, who's next? All right, you up here in the front, and then the young lady with the auburn hair.
My name's Monty Whaley. I live on Laurel Road. I'm about 3 miles from there. I had all this stuff wrote down, but they've covered it all pretty much. The only thing I would like to add is that the federal government is looking for, we didn't have a national park in the state of Delaware, and I understand it, Trap Pond, and may be considered. You've got Trussman's Pond, you've got Raccoon Pond, and you have Trap Pond. This project, as they call it, is dead smack in the middle of all of that. So I hope that doesn't deter the federal government from sending the revenues. It may cause us to lose some funding in the future. So I encourage you to deny this request.
All right, sir. Thank you. Yes, ma'am. You're next.
Hi, my name is Cheris Beers, and we purchased the property right next to where the subdivision is trying to go in. We bought 33 acres in the hopes of preserving the land. We have probably the smallest home, and as somebody stated, our garage is about the same size. So we're big into the outdoors. I have 2 children, and we, back in 2008, right after we moved in, our home was burglarized. Called the cops, and it was almost an hour before they got there. So that gives you a little bit of insight as to how long it takes to get out there. As a mother of 2, I strongly oppose this, and I hope that you will please consider to deny it, because I'm really concerned about the crime rate that will increase due to the fact that we have a cluster coming in next to us. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Okay, who's next? Okay, sir, all the way in the back there. Yeah, you're good. Yeah, come on up.
My name's Mitch Legowski, and I live right off of Witten Road on Legowski Lane. And I hear everybody talking about everything about the project except the safety part of it. As you leave this project and you turn left, you head east. You got a back road, 50-mile-an-hour speed limit, but what you come to, this Trap Pond trail they got comes out at the dam at Raccoon Pond. It's about a 100-yard area where you could see 50 kids at one time, parents, people fishing, and I can just imagine somebody speeding down here. You can't see them until you're on top of them. If you don't know they're there, you got a very potential bad scene that could possibly happen. And that's basically, I haven't heard nobody talk about that other than the bad road on top of it. Okay, thank you.
All right, sir, we thank you. All right, anybody else? Okay, sir. Yes, sir. Another PowerPoint?
Short one, promise.
Well,
got 2 minutes.
Right.
I'll talk as it goes. How's that?
As patient as you all have been, we're going to stay here as long as you want. So,
can I submit this? This is a copy of the PowerPoint for the record.
Okay. You want to give that to Mr. Lank for the record, please?
Thank you. And for the record, my name is Scott Whaley. I live 34650 Hudson Road, about 2 doors down from Mikey.
No such luck.
I think that's going to stick.
No such luck.
Like, you'll be before us again sometime. And,
I draw your attention to this. My wife put this together. She had to go home. We had a daughter fall ill tonight. So she put this together. This is a picture of all the homes in our general area.
Mm-hmm.
And this is showing the type of home, and I think you've got one submitted from another lady of the homes in the area. We didn't know she was doing that, so
that's fine.
She put some things together. What we're looking at is this development does not match these homes that we're presenting here. Majority of them, a lot of these points have been covered, but these are homes in our general area that you can see. Neighbors know them, recognize them. This is not going to match. To go over some safety concerns, one lady mentioned there was 4 days before snowplows came out. Well, they came out and there was like one lane. If you met somebody, you weren't going to get, somebody had to give. So that's one case, that's a true case. They're talking about more snow in the future. So this is going to be something that we're going to have to contend with. We have a four-wheel drive truck. My wife has a Suburban four-wheel drive. We couldn't get out even after they scraped it the first time. Farmers in the area, another safety concern. Farmers have big tractors, combines, trucks, and they run around there. And you get another 400 cars on average. There's some sharp bends where there's going to be some coming togethers. There's going to be some problems. These farmers need space. They need the roads to run back and forth, and there's a lot of farming in the area. I'm waiting for the picture to come up. Don't want to get to. It shows a cornfield in there. And I don't think we passed it yet. Maybe we did pass it. But when I'm just a homeowner concerned about my property values, this does not work in the area. No cable. What are the kids going to do? My family does bike ride up and down the road. If all these cars come in here, I don't feel safe for my three daughters and my wife to travel up and down the road, and they go on the bike trails to Trap Pond all the time. So I request that you deny this. Appreciate your time.
All right, sir. Thank you. All right, who's next? Yes, sir. You and the... Yeah, you.
My name is Woodrow Whaley. I live at 14975 Woody Road. I've been there so long, they named the road after me. I live between Wooden Road and Arvey Road. And I just want to bring up a couple of points that wasn't covered. One of them is like standing water in this development. Standing water, I understand, under homes creates a health hazard for the family living there. Also, I'm concerned about the effect on wildlife, especially eagles. And I don't mean pro football eagles. Eagles that nest in the area.
Bald eagles.
And okay. I thank you for your time.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Okay, who's next? Yes, ma'am. Okay, while she's calling her way up here, who wants to be next? Do we have anybody else want to speak after? Okay, you're going to be next. Don't let me forget.
Mine is real short and sweet.
Okay.
My name is Karen Joseph. I live at 34773 Hudson Road. I was born and raised on this West property. There was over 400 acres of land. This community, I'm very proud of. I'm very proud of these homes. All I ask this committee, all I ask you from your hearts, is search, listen, read your material, comprehend what has been said here tonight. I have nothing more to say, except please take it to heart when you make this count. This vote. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Yes, sir. Don't be nervous. Good grief. It's 20 minutes of midnight. You don't have to be nervous.
My name is Michael Goring. I live at 14746 Arvey Road.
Okay, sir.
I'm a professional firefighter for 30 years.
Volunteer
for 18 in New Jersey, Elizabeth.
Okay, great.
The road's only 19 feet wide with the grass and stuff with the ditch. Fire truck without the mirrors is 8'5". Ambulance is 7'7". New Jersey, where the town, the city I live in, or the city I work in, they estimate 2.5 cars per family. Mm-hmm. That's 125 cars. And with the farm equipment and stuff, it's going to be real tight for these fire trucks. And that's about it.
All right, then.
Okay.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, who's next? Yes, sir. I believe your name was Dad, right? Mikey and Dad.
Right. My name is longer than what I wanted to say. My name is Josephus Aloysius Lucas van den Meidenberg. I live in Trap Pond.
Did you get all that, Lawrence?
I feel like I could spell that for you.
Have you got a card?
Mike Eagle, spell it for me.
D-A-D.
Yeah.
I want you guys to think about the, again, coming back on the home values. There are retired people there. They're kind of like, have a reverse mortgage. If the house values are going down, their retirement is going down, part two. Okay. That's all.
All right, sir. We thank you. Okay, who's next? Anyone else want to speak? Yes, sir, all the way in the back. Well, I got two in the back, so I guess this gentleman here and...
I'm Dana Moore. I spent the first 18 years of my life about a half mile down the road on Wooden Road. Okay. When I was 19, I got a house trailer. Moved about a quarter mile down the road on the family farm. And I guess about 15 years ago, the farm on the north side of that come up for sale and we purchased that. So we got 93 acres right on the north side. Only thing I'm opposed to, certainly, only thing that I can think of that hasn't been addressed is this trust company that is proposing this. How about they go belly up or go bankrupt? And the people have been paying on their houses, but now they don't own the land that's underneath that house. Have we done any service to the people that we're trying to help? That's about all I got to say, fellas.
All right, sir. Well, we thank you. Was there somebody else in the back, or the front, or the side? Anyone else? Anyone else like to speak in opposition? Anyone on the commission? Oh, here comes one. Okay. Boy, you just barely slipped in under the wire. But you made it.
Yep. My name is Buddy Joseph. Mm-hmm. I live on Hudson Road. I've been at having my wife Karen there a while ago. That's her relatives in the graveyard. Mm-hmm. I've been at that since 1954. She's been at there 72 years. And what I would like to know, what kind of, where the houses is going to be put out there, where is these houses coming from?
Well, I think what they testified to was that they were going to be stick built by local builders, I believe is what they said.
In other words, I've got two boys that's contractors. We're going to get built quite a few of them, right?
You need to direct your comments to me.
All right, okay.
Just talk to me.
In other words, they're not modulars that's going to be trucked in. Every one of them is going to be stick built on the land, right?
That's what they testified to.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's what they said.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So, and then they'll have to pass Sussex County Code. And everything, all the inspections,
just like
a house we built, yeah.
Yes, sir.
Uh-huh. And it's something else. My mother-in-law is 98 years old. She that was her husband that gave this land to the my son-in-law, my brother-in-law, you know. Mm-hmm. In other words, she's 98 years old, still drives a car, plays cards 8 nights a week, and drives every place she wants to go. But we don't let her drive solid. And when she find out all these people is going to be back, she is scared to death. And I'm going to tell you one thing right now. If this thing goes through, I'm putting up no trespassing signs. And if anybody goes up and goes mess with her, they're going to have to answer to me. I'm 72. I've lived a good life. I don't care about it. You know what? Yeah.
Duly noted.
That's right. Yeah. I tell it like it is.
It won't be me going up that way.
Better not be. Because I have talked to state troopers, and I don't have nothing against these people. But I know how it's going to be. And I've got probably 180 acres of land. I better not catch none of them over hunting on my land either. So that's what I told us to tell you. Thank you.
All right, sir. Well, thank you. All right. You know we don't allow that. Okay. Is there anyone else that would like to speak in opposition? Okay. Does anyone on the commission have any questions? I just want to remind you all that the gentleman who just spoke, I think, said something in passing that actually is quite important. And he said that he didn't mean any harm to any of these people. And I'm sure that none of these people mean any harm to anybody else here. There are always good people on both sides of these issues most of the time. That's what makes our decision so difficult. I can promise you that that you'll have our best efforts. I again want to thank you for coming out this evening and for your extreme patience. You were the last ones on the list tonight, and it's just kind of the way it worked out. And also to the applicant as well. Thanks again. Please be careful going home. Believe it or not, we actually have a little more business to do after we adjourn this public hearing. So I'm going to ask you the same thing I asked those folks about 5 or 6 hours ago. When you get up to leave, just get up and leave, okay? And if you want to talk, please do so outside. And again, thank you so much for being here. We'll close the public hearing. You are invited to spend the rest of your Thursday evening or Friday morning with us to see if we make a decision, or you may wish to call the office in the morning.